I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and you're listening to The Takeaway. Earlier this month, Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens delivered his first State of the City address, and he emphasized the plans to bring more affordable housing to Atlanta.
Our administration is committed to creating or preserving 20,000 units of affordable housing over the next 8 years, which will be overseen by our Affordable Housing Strike Force, a one-stop shop to oversee all of our affordable housing needs. It's an ambitious goal, but with your help, I know we will get there.
Over the past year, Atlanta's median home prices have increased nearly 24%. And according to the real estate brokerage firm Redfin, Atlanta home purchases have been particularly targeted by investors. That means flipping and reselling for even higher prices. So let me break this down for you. Housing is considered affordable when it costs 30% or less of your household's annual pre-tax income. But according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, the median annual income in Atlanta has increased by roughly $1,000 since 2020. Meanwhile, the median home price has gone up by more than $100,000. You don't even need a calculator to realize that those numbers don't add up to affordability. As housing prices rise, the city's racial demographics are shifting. White residents coming to Atlanta have vastly outnumbered the arrival of new Black residents. That's a reversal of trends from previous decades when Black residents made up the majority of Atlanta's population. For our ongoing series, Georgia at the Intersections, we're talking about what this all means for Atlanta residents and Georgia politics. I spoke with Jim Burris, a reporter who's been covering Atlanta's housing market for nearly 14 years at Atlanta's public radio station, WABE.
If you're coming from a San Francisco or a New York City, then the prices here are going to look cheap. But let me put it into some perspective. Maybe a decade ago or a little longer, when we had the housing bubble burst, Atlanta suffered more than just about anywhere. And that brought to the average home prices well below $200,000. And now they are approaching $500,000. So we've really seen prices more than double in the past decade.
And have salaries in the Atlanta market kept up?
Mine hasn't. Most haven't, I would say.
it hasn't doubled for you?
No, not in 10 years, it hasn't. But, we do have a lot of tech jobs that are new, and Atlanta's kind of labeling itself anyway as the tech hub of the South. And so those are relatively high paying jobs. And so we have a lot of people moving from traditional tech hubs like San Francisco with a higher income, and then some new jobs here that are technology related that do pay somewhat higher. And that's able to sustain the market. You know, those of us who are in a more moderate type of income, it's really priced us out of being able to live where we want to.
So typically, when we see those kinds of housing prices rise so swiftly, it ends up benefiting folks who already own their homes, right? Because suddenly their homes become more valuable. But for those who are trying to get into the market, right, it creates this barrier. Are we seeing something similar in Atlanta, or are we still seeing that even those who already own are finding this market challenging?
It depends on where you own. So some parts of the area have really appreciated very, very quickly, and those being closer to the city proper itself. The farther you go out into the suburbs, maybe it's less of an issue. But yeah, if you're a first-time home buyer, you're really going to have to make some compromises to be able to afford to buy here. And I can speak, you know, personally to this. My home has appreciated quite a bit since I bought it in 2014. However, if I were to try to buy in my own neighborhood, even that appreciation, I wouldn't be able to. I couldn't afford anything around here.
Now, is this just affecting home prices for those who are purchasing, or is this impacting the rental market as well?
Definitely the rental market, and there seems to have been a lag. That's more of a recent development, but Atlanta's traditionally had relatively affordable rents too. I know that now they have doubled, tripled in many cases, say compared to 5 years ago. And we're hearing now of rental bidding wars, much like you would hear for the cost of a house that's hot on the market. People are actually willing to pay more than what landlords are asking in order to get into an apartment that they want.
What does this mean for people's lived experience?
It means that you have a lot of more affluent people in any one neighborhood than you did before. And so, of course, we talk about gentrification, we talk about displacement, we talk about identity. And Atlanta specifically is a city that's known for its neighborhoods and kind of the community focus and feel that individual neighborhoods have. And there's a real danger of those being pushed out and lost just because of this homogenization of wealthy people are being the only ones able to afford to buy.
What kind of neighborhood? What has changed? And what difference does it make if wealthier people live there? Don't they just make the place nicer?
Well, perhaps on the surface, you could argue that they do. But, you know, Atlanta is not been known traditionally as a rich city. There's a great income disparity here, but there's always been a place for people of different backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds. And one of the first stories that I did when I started back in 2008 on housing was the $10,000 neighborhood. There was a neighborhood in the city of Atlanta where almost every house on the street was valued at $10,000 or less. Now, these were falling apart. It was a blighted area. It was high crime. That neighborhood, now you can't find a home, even the same home, for less than $300,000. And that's because developers are now keen to its proximity to things like downtown Atlanta and, you know, new arenas and places that people want to be. So if you lived in that neighborhood, maybe your entire life or nearby, you're finding yourself priced out with really no hope of being able to stay.
As we are emerging into another part of the pandemic here, we've really seen housing prices increase in every way. I mean, for people who are building new homes, right, the effect of the supply chain on the cost of materials to what I understand to be simply a good old-fashioned supply-demand problem. Many more people wanting to buy and wanting to rent than there is available stock.
I think that that's, of course, at play here for sure. And that's probably the large majority of what's driving prices. You can't deny the market and its effect. However, it does seem to be taking away something that, as you mentioned, Atlanta was known for, affordable housing, and kind of this notion that no matter how much money you made, you could live in the city. And now that's just becoming something that a lot of other people are able to achieve.
Jim Burris is reporter at WABE. Thank you for joining The Takeaway.
Melissa, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
We've been talking about the challenges of finding affordable housing in the city of Atlanta. Let's expand a bit and talk about what these trends look like throughout the state. Bambi Hayes Brown is CEO of Georgia Advancing Communities Together, an organization representing nonprofit housing and community development groups in Georgia. Bambi, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
So we've been talking a little bit about the increase in housing prices in Atlanta and part of how that's being driven by investors. But what does that look like across the rest of the state?
It is a significant issue around the state. Many people think that the affordability gap as it relates to home prices as well as rentals are limited to our urban areas such as Atlanta or Metro Atlanta. But it's also true for our smaller urban communities and our rural communities, especially those rural communities that have significantly less wages, such as minimum wage. So it is an issue that we are seeing around the state, unfortunately.
Say a bit more about those rural communities, because I do feel like so frequently when we talk about Georgia, we go straight to the Atlanta area for important reasons, but politically, socially, and then really this your point you're making economically. Tell us about some of these other communities.
One of the things that I always remind people is that Georgia has 159 counties. So it's a pretty big state. So as someone who travels the state of Georgia, and I am a native of rural Georgia, I am able to see from a different lens than most other people. But throughout the state, especially in our rural areas, there's not a lot of business and industry. And even though I know that there are chambers of commerce and other entities and joint development authorities are really trying to lure business and industries into our state, is mostly retail, laborer work that makes up a significant portion of our labor pool in rural Georgia. And unfortunately, the prices are still rising. So there is a shortage of especially affordable housing. That is housing for those who are at the lowest of incomes. So people with fixed incomes, people who make minimum wage. And because of that shortage, that is driving up the cost of rentals, as well as home prices. For example, I have seen some home prices in rural South Georgia that were over $250,000. Mm-hmm. And some may say, well, that's affordable for Atlanta, but not when you're making $7.25 an hour and only working 20 hours per week.
And I'm assuming also rural areas may have simply fewer rental units, that these are places where typically it had been somewhat affordable to buy into, for example, moderate sized homes, small homes, and therefore there probably hadn't been a lot of investment in rental housing.
That is correct, especially as it relates to multifamily housing. Most of the rental housing specifically is from small mom and pop landlords. So it may be someone that has anywhere from 1 to 5 rental units, and the stock is just not there. So when you have that shortage in the rural areas, it really exacerbates the issue.
Now, also maybe help us to dispel some myth about rural areas in the South, which as someone from the South and currently living in the South, I know often folks presume that they are racially homogenous places. And I'm always like, no, actually, you find a fair bit of diversity in our rural communities as well.
That is correct. Our rural communities are very diverse. And when Georgia Act, we did some nonpartisan voter engagement in 2020 and in 2021, we were able to bring along some people who were from the urban areas. And a lot of people was really surprised to see that our communities are very diverse. So there's the Black population, the Asian population, the Latinx population is throughout the state of Georgia and also in our rural communities. So we're not a monolith.
Indeed, when you make the point about nonpartisan voter engagement, talk to me a little bit about how you expect to see these issues about finding affordable housing showing up in this year's midterm elections. I'm wondering if people are thinking of this at all as a political issue, or if it's seen as more of a, you know, kind of general economic issue, or folks are like, hey, I need some relief here, you know, for my representatives.
I would say it's a combination of the two, but more so, housing is a part of the platforms now. So this was especially brought to light after COVID, because even though those of us who have been in the housing industry for a long time knew that there were significant housing challenges and the wealth gap was getting wider, when COVID happened, it began to affect all people. So it wasn't just the lowest of incomes. And so what we saw in 2021, 2022, as well as the latter part of 2020, that we had elected officials begin to run on the platform of affordable housing. So now it's brought to the forefront, and so many campaigns and candidate forums, the issue of affordable housing continuously comes up every time.
Talk to me about some of the state level policies that might be able to make housing more affordable, and particularly protections for renters.
Well, unfortunately, Georgia is not very renter friendly as it relates to our state legislation. But back in July of 2019, we did pass House Bill 346, which is a bill that protects renters against retaliation from landlords if they complain to code enforcement for unhealthy or unsafe living conditions. And so that was a significant win in Georgia. And we have continued that fight for renter protections, strengthening our fair housing laws, as well as most recently looking at ways to ensure that landlords give at least a 7-day right to cure a default before they file for an eviction for a renter. So, for example, if a person is late on their rent, they can get an eviction filed on them. But most of the time, when we're talking about our low-wage workers, many of them get paid by the week. And mm-hmm. so they just need that 7 days to come up with the rest of the rent in order to make their payment. And so those are some of the things that we are looking at on the state level. And then there's also some federal legislation, such as universal housing vouchers. We're asking for significant investments in our housing trust fund and our national housing trust funds, and protecting our state and federal housing tax credits that would be able to spur investment into affordable housing.
April is, in fact, Fair Housing Month. As you look at the state of Georgia, what gives you hope about housing in the state?
What gives me hope that I have not seen in my 25 years plus of being in this industry are that people are actually talking about it now. It's not like this hidden thing that only affected one segment of people. So now people are actually talking about the lack of affordable housing, how people need affordable housing, how we need fair housing, with this being Fair Housing Month. So even employers, schools, everything intersects with housing. And that's what gives me hope, is that now we're building a broad-based ecosystem of people that now see how housing affects everything that we do in our society.
Bambi Hayes Brown is the CEO of Georgia Advancing Communities Together. Bambi, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.